Some inmates at the state prison are working to uphold a standard of integrity despite living decades behind bars. The South Dakota State Penitentiary houses people who have committed heinous crimes. It's also a place where inmates of many faiths can choose to worship. I'm Keely Boltina with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. A Lutheran congregation called St. Dismas has more than 100 churchgoers in the 700-person prison. They elect council members, and those inmate leaders talk about forming community when their own actions keep them from being part of regular society. Church council members meet behind the walls. They begin their monthly discussion with a devotion from an inmate named Christopher.
You know, this is one psalm I turn to a lot when I'm just struggling, so I just figured I'd read it. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me lie down in green pastures, and he leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul, he leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, and my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
The council members agree to suspend most of their business until next month so they can take time to talk with me about their experiences leading their church. In order, hear from Pastor Bob Shell and prisoners TJ, Josh, Christopher, Dave, Donnie, Travis, and Justin.
We also have a surplus of candidates. I think for two reasons, primarily because the men love their church. Secondly, because there aren't many other opportunities for leadership or responsibility. But the other thing that's different is that you are being watched. If you're on the church council and your behavior in the cell hall isn't appropriate to a church council member, other council members will let you know, other congregation members, and men who have no affiliation or interest in the church are still interested in letting you know that your behavior is not in keeping with your faith. I think if church councils on the outside were like they are on the inside, we wouldn't get anybody to run for council.
Basically, you know, there's a doorway, you know, and we all walk through there, and people, they can turn that switch off and they'll be the perfect little angels, but then when they leave, they turn their switch back on and they're back to their old selves.
I guess the perfect example is if you picture your church on the street and who is in the positions in your church, you might see them on Sunday. You don't know them the rest of the week. Here, we live together, we work together, we eat together, and we go to church together. So it's real hard to fake it. Somebody knows. If you're not ready to live the right way, you're gonna get called out immediately. If you're doing things in the cell hall you're not supposed to be doing, if you're getting write-ups, if you're going to the shoe, getting in trouble, if your name is constantly in the CO's mouth, you're in trouble. So you better be ready to start living unlike the rest of the people, specifically if you're on the council, because for some reason, you're like spotlighted everywhere you go. And whether it's somebody looking to help you or somebody looking to harm you, everything will end up to Bob, everything. He will get a kite, this guy did this, or, you know, we'll hear that this guy said this in the cell hall and it was inappropriate or whatever. And that's issues we have to deal with.
Yeah, like say, my name's Christopher, and it really is. I mean, and like he says, it's not even people associated with this church or any church up here. You're really picked apart. People find out, however they find out through the grapevines, that you're part of a council, and they will watch you and keep you accountable for your actions, whether or not they want to just use that to pick you apart, or there's other people that are saying, hey, if that guy's leading a Christian worship, he needs to behave like a Christian person. So we are held accountable, and that's, I know for me, that's one reason I like to be a part of the council and stuff, is because I know left to my own standings, my accountability isn't very good. So it's nice to have that fellowship and that camaraderie to keep me on the right path.
I wonder if anyone could speak to that concept of creating community, because the images of being in prison that are on TV and things that, I mean, that's not necessarily what it's really like. What people think happens and that you're in the cell all the time and that it's just lots and lots of bad, that's not all that's happening here. How do you try to form that community when that's what you're up against?
Well, for one thing, they see stuff on TV, like you say, and they got a certain image of it. Just for an example, Pastor Bob's father, he was like 90-some years old, come to visit us, and he's like, everybody's all shaking his hand. He's like, wow, I'm shocked. I didn't realize people were so friendly here. You know, it just blew him away that people were so kind, you know, because they always get such a bad image of people in prison. I think a lot of people don't understand that they're human beings too. They just made a mistake that day.
Coming up here, it's easier to build a community because as you walk in that door, we're not the clothes we wear. We're not that inmate title. And, you know, it's hard to build that community outside of this church without that because, you know, you're your crime or you're whatever you did to get in here. But coming in here and allowing people to see that side of you helps build those friendships that with people you may not normally talk to otherwise.
When you walked in here your first day, did you think, I want to be a church council member in prison? That's what I'm going for.
Well, not the first day, but when I joined up with St. Dismas, I was raised Lutheran, and Pastor Marlin, he was here before Pastor Bob, and I told him, I said, I wanted to run on the council, and he looked at me and he goes, I think you might want to hold off on that. And I thought, well, who are you to say that? So it kind of struck a wrong chord with me. But then he says, you just want to take a step back, give it a year, and then see how things are going. Because he didn't know me so well, and I didn't know everything else going on in here. But it was actually, well, words of wisdom, you know, for that, because I did learn a lot, and I met a lot of people, and I think they were comfortable with me, and I was comfortable, you know, with them. So then I got elected the next year. So
really what seemed to be an initial judgment was kind of more just a suggestion to make sure mm-hmm. that you knew what you were getting yourself into.
Oh, yeah. Yep, definitely. So, well, you know, to be a councilman in here, we do have, you know, some basic requirements that we needed to set in place so that we didn't want just anybody coming up here. Somebody that didn't, you know, believe in God for that matter.
Well, you stand by the door and you, once they walk in, you shake their hands and welcome them, saying they hope they come back. A lot of people, they keep coming back and they keep coming back. Even the visitors, once they come here for the first time, they're always thrilled to come back the second time.
As council members, we stand in the front right as they come in at chapel and we greet everyone, shake everyone's hand, try to, if we know their names, you know, hi, Paul, or hi, whoever it is. You know, and that just, I think that's what really separates it from cell halls to in here is you see people without judgment. You just see them for the person they are. They're coming here to worship God. You know, out on the outside, I know a lot of times, I mean, up in chapel, I'm real friendly. I can talk to people. I don't feel that comfort when I'm in the cell halls. You know, people that I know and people that I've befriended and stuff, I can say hi in passing and all that. But in the chapel, people that I wouldn't normally say hi to just for fear on my own part, stuff like that, you know, I will say hi to in the chapel just because you have that comfort feeling, and we know we're all just up here just to worship God and you know, not, you know, to be attacked or anything like that. You know, it really does feel like a place outside of prison. It feels almost like a normal life again instead of the cell halls. That's, I mean, I know especially for me, I always have that fear of, okay, do I have to watch my back all the time kind of stuff, where up here you don't feel any of that. You just feel peace, really.
Pastor Bob, one of the alumni of our congregation who's on the outside now says worship on Thursday nights is the safest place in South Dakota. And I think he says that because, well, the prison system's obligated to let men practice their faith. They're not obligated to give as much freedom as they do. I have complete access to the prison. I can go anywhere, anytime. And when we worship, you know, we've got over 100 people in the chapel, and the officer stays outside of the chapel. It's a men's worship service. But the men who attend know how important that is and what a privilege it is. So there aren't discipline problems because the men love their church and the opportunity they have to worship.
Do you guys feel like because you're church council members, you have a greater burden when people come in? And I mean, how do you describe that responsibility that you have that other people who just come to the congregation don't necessarily carry with them?
To be open-minded and humble, but at the same token, you know, show that you're a pillar of the community and you're setting standards, you know, how you conduct yourself around other people, outside guests, how you greet them, give you an opportunity to open up, let down your guard, and learn how to be intellectual, because most of us tend to suffer from PTSD. Conversations don't last long, and the nervousness, the fear of meeting other people. Just fellow convicts or inmates have a hard time about asking questions, or where do they go instead of going to the wrong person and getting the bad information and have a bad outcome. They can go to somebody that's got their head on right, might be able to point them in the right direction or speak to somebody that knows how to obtain what they're looking for.
So there's a practical aspect of this too, where, you know, you are able to help point people in the right direction, as opposed to just, I mean, and I don't say just to mean just, but as opposed to shaking hands, saying hello. There's another layer of that in that building, can I call it trust?
Yeah, you're building trust, but at the same time, you're building camaraderie. So your small steps will, in the long run, make big gains. It'll build something bigger. And everybody should know that they have an outlet. Not a lot of people know that.
I'm not trying to put myself in your shoes, but I feel like if I walked in here tomorrow, I probably wouldn't trust a lot of people. I probably wouldn't feel a lot of camaraderie right away. So how do you communicate to people that this is genuine? We are here for you and with you.
We're all different. We're all from different backgrounds. The people that are comfortable with Justin might not be comfortable with me. The people that are comfortable with me might not be comfortable with Travis. So we all bring different people, different varieties to church for different reasons. And, you know, that trust, nobody gets that right away. You know, we've been here for years and years, most of us. You know, there's 700 people here. We get 100 come to church. So there's 600 people out there that know who we are. So there's a big pool for you to pull and invite people. That's one of the things we do. We invite people every week, try to invite somebody new that hasn't come. You know, come one time. If you don't like it, you don't have to come again, but just come once. Some of us that have been here for a long time, you know, we have plenty of friends and lots of people that know us. Well, of course you're going to invite them first. Well, they come, they like it. Well, what do? They invite somebody else. Well, now they see, you know, there's 3-4 of you guys. Okay, well, you guys are decent. You've been here a long time. You're doing things right. Well, I'm going to come now. And then the next, and then the next. So pretty soon you have a strong community, and that's basically what's going on.
So it's built on those individual relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It almost is like being held to a different standard, because it's not just in here. It's encouraging. It's encouragement when we're not in church, when we're at work, when we're in the cell hall, and it's taken a step to invite somebody to come up that usually doesn't. Somebody that's an outcast, somebody that doesn't talk to people, maybe a little antisocial or whatever. It's a way to get out of the cell, if nothing else. But maybe they come and they hear something. They hear some music. They have an outside visitor. They come in. They meet some people that they can talk to and relate to a little bit.
I got introduced by our president, Josh. I was at work wheelchair shopping. There's two shops. Worked in the same building. He uses MCI. He builds like jacks and knot tying. And I work for Hope Haven International Wheelchairs. And I was like, taking a drink or something. He's like, he asked me if I wanted to join, sign up for a church council. And he's like, I'm like, okay. And
so he just sprung it on you. You were just taking a drink,
kind of.
And there he was.
No, not really. It was like, I forgot who he was talking to. And
well, yeah, I had mentioned that you'd been coming for a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I seen you every week, and that I suggested that you throw your name in the hat and run for council because you're there all the time, you know, and that we're always looking for somebody to be on the ballot that, you know, isn't just going to drop off. We're looking for people that want to do it, so.
I was going to say another thing that's unique about this council is I think in most congregations, at least Lutheran congregations on the outside, nobody ever disagrees at the meeting. All the business is done in the parking lot. But one of the things I love and that makes me real anxious about being pastor here is nobody is afraid to bring up anything. I mean, nobody hints. You know, if there's an issue, boy, it's right on the table. And that's wonderful and hard on my blood pressure.
The things that I'm hearing from you guys and from Pastor Bob are things that people don't necessarily associate with inmates. Understanding, compassion, a willingness to help out, wanting to help other people. So what do people who listen to this, who have no idea who you are, need to know about who you are and what you do?
I think the people that beat us up the most are ourselves. You know, as inmates, we hold a lot of blame on ourselves and guilt and all that. But even in that, I think that's why we so much want to help other people, is because we want to turn our lives around and also help other people turn their lives around. I think for me, like, you know, I'm my own worst critic, but that surprise leadership is, I've had guys come up to me and they're like, well, thank you for helping keep me on track. Or they'll come to me and say, hey, you know, they'll be talking to their friends, oh yeah, this is the guy that makes sure that I'm staying on the right path and stuff. And to me, that it catches me off guard, because I'm like, well, I'm definitely not the kind of person that should be doing that, because I have so little self-esteem in myself. But you know, we come here because obviously we messed up, but we can learn from that and become better in our lives, and through that help other people. And I think that's the biggest thing, is, you know, almost everyone in here knows that they messed up and just want to change who they were and become who they always wanted to be in here.
In some ways, being the pastor here is like traveling back in time. On the outside, everybody's busy and overwhelmed. And I always say that prison clarifies your vision. It enables you to see what's important, family and friends and faith. But there aren't distractions here. There's no email, there's no computers, there's no internet. There is cable television, but a limited number of channels. But that's the only distraction. And so it's a lot of the superfluous stuff of life has been stripped away. And so everything here is real and it matters. I'm called by the congregation. The men voted to call me as their pastor. I wasn't hired by the warden or sent by the bishop. And that says I'm accountable to this council, that they are my boss. And I think that matters in here particularly, that I don't work for the state, I work for them, for the church.
Even though we all wear khakis every day, we're still children of God. Some people may have a bad opinion of us, but a lot of people don't understand until one of their own family members are in that type of situation, and then they see it from their point of view. I've had people come up to me and ask me, hey, I got a son or a nephew or a cousin that has a drug problem, what can I do? And I tell them, basically, there's nothing you can do but show love to them. Because if they want help, they have to want to seek it themselves.
But you can't let up on that love.
Yeah, just always let them know that you care. A lot of people in prisons, I don't know about anywhere else, but I know in here, a lot of people come from broken families. a lot of our families weren't, as you call, the normal mom and dad sit home at supper every night. You know, where a lot of us are three or four divorces and bounced around as kids and had school problems, you know. So it just took us a little longer to wake up in life or become, how would I say, not in a confused state of mind due to chemicals, you know.
And that's what you are here. You have that clarity, and you feel that community.
Yeah, because five, six years ago, you would have never got me up in the chapel. I was mad at the world, you know. I was just going to rec every night, lifting weights, and then my mom passed away, and a lot of it kind of hit me. And I've been coming ever since. I don't ever miss. So this place means a lot to a lot of people in here. Like the chapel says on the sign, hope. You know, it gives a lot of people hope.